Unmanned aircraft have proven pretty darn effective in surveillance and in hitting enemy sites with missiles. But as both defensive and offensive platforms, they've got a lot more potential when working in groups known as swarms. It's something the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency has been working on. Kelly Saylor is Associate Fellow and Defense Analyst at the Center for a New American Security. I asked her about this budding possibility.
Essentially, a swarm is a group of unmanned systems, and they're able to coordinate amongst each other. So, for example, if you're thinking about drone swarms in a military context, the swarms could communicate and coordinate such that they would understand if one system had already neutralized a particular target or not. And that essentially enables them to prioritize among targets so that if one target has already been neutralized, the swarm can redirect and prioritize to a different target set.
And this is something that they are working on, or does the capability exist now to do this?
It's something that they're working on. DARPA has a number of projects where they're trying to perfect this kind of technology. It really is a future technology, but they have a number of projects that are looking at coordinated unmanned systems that would be ideally relatively cheap and disposable systems so that they could really get an edge on the cost and position strategies of some of our adversaries.
Sounds like it's basically a software problem. What they would be working on would be software to make these things communicate with one another and respond to the signals they get.
I think that's correct. There are a number of things with regard to the software that really need to be perfected. One thing is actually sense and avoid technology. And so currently, if you take a drone, it has a relatively primitive ability to detect objects that are already in its flight path. And so what more advanced sense and avoid technology would do is it would enable the drone to see, there's a building that's in my flight path. I'm going to fly around it. Right now, many drones would just fly straight into the building if they were flying on an automated flight path. So that's one aspect that they're doing a lot of work on. DARPA has a program involved in looking at high-speed automated flight with sense and avoid technology. That's going to be a big hurdle for them to get over.
I guess one of the ideas would be to get the operator out of the chain there, because they have to sit looking through a video feed and aim it basically with a joystick right now, and that's expensive and boring.
Right. So they're certainly working on improving autonomy so that you could simply program the flight path into a drone, or give it pretty much free rein and say, I would like you to go here, get there however you need to. And that's certainly something that needs to happen before they're able to introduce swarms.
So I'm going to go to the beach for a couple of hours or go get coffee. You don't hit any buildings in the meantime.
Correct.
And when DARPA does a project like this, typically do they use contractors to develop the software, or is it something that they would develop with their own staff? Sounds like something they would have to contract out.
They do a fair amount of work in-house. They also host a number of different competitions that leverage universities, private companies, and really, I think, just try to compete to find a solution.
So there's not a lot of grant and contracting activity connected with this drone swarm idea at this point?
I think there is some work on the enabling technologies. So, for example, the sense and avoid technologies, there are grants available for that. There are lots of people in the commercial sector that are working on that, because that type of activity has commercial application.
And all of this work that you hear about being done for autonomous cars, which they expect us to all climb into, taxis with no drivers, mm-hmm. Does any of that apply, or is that too slow for aircraft?
I think similarly, the enabling technology is quite useful and is something that would have military application. If you think of what Google is doing with unmanned cars, and then think of the applications for ground forces, you could see them using unmanned systems in convoys for logistics purposes. I think that's really where we're at, where the Army is starting to think about using that kind of technology.
But the software specifically for autonomous vehicles on the ground, that itself would not be useful for aircraft that fly much faster and operate in more than one plane.
Yeah, I think the transferability between domains is probably non-existent.
We're speaking with Kelly Saylor, Associate Fellow at the Center for a New American Security, looking again at drone swarms. What is the military application for these?
So I think there are a number of interesting applications. For example, with the swarm technology, there are lots of interesting applications with fleet defense. So if you think about a lot of surface assets that might be susceptible to fast attack craft or smaller vessels, you could see a bunch of unmanned surface assets that were deployed in defense of those systems. Similarly, you could think of those systems deployed in the air. So you could put up a wall of defense with that would essentially create noise or clutter for incoming missiles or incoming drones. And then you can also use them to complicate adversary targeting. So you put out, you deploy a number of these systems. Probably one, if you send out one unmanned system, it's probably not going to destroy an adversary surface asset of any substantial size. Now, if you deploy a large number of these systems, it certainly could, at the very least, overwhelm their defense systems, but it could also potentially actually cause damage or neutralize their surface assets.
So when these are flying in a swarm to radar or or heat-seeking systems, it would basically confuse them because there would be so many possible places it could aim.
Correct. If they're large enough and if they're able to get the signature such that they're able to essentially spoof the system, that's certainly an attractive application.
As an offensive platform, then, it would be that a given drone is too light by itself to carry enough missiles to, say, sink a Chinese carrier if we had to, but a bunch of them together would add up to a lot of firepower.
Correct. At the very least, I think it could destroy the flight deck. Now, if we see advances in the miniaturization of munitions, which is something that industry is certainly interested in working on, we could get to a point where even a smaller number of swarming drones could destroy a much larger vessel.
And this technology, should it come to fruit, how would the United States keep it out of the hands of everybody else? Because the drones themselves are throughout the world, it seems like that software could easily be lost.
Right. That's a very pernicious problem. We're seeing a pretty massive proliferation of unmanned systems writ large. There are over 90 countries and non-state actors that already have just a simple drone at the very least. And as you point out, the software is very easy to get your hands on. There are some that's going to be open source. You can envision a future in which even someone could purchase a large number of commercial off-the-shelf drones and perhaps not get them to swarm in a coordinated fashion, but could certainly deploy them en masse. And that's something that I know the U.S. military is certainly concerned about and thinking about.
And how far away are we from having this type of autonomous and self-directing swarms of drones?
That's a good question, and it's certainly difficult to estimate. I think we're very close to having autonomous systems that can operate without user input. I think we're a little bit further off from having the coordinated systems, but we're certainly making pretty rapid progress. DARPA actually just demonstrated the ability to fly an unmanned system autonomously at relatively high speeds and to also avoid objects that are in its flight path. So I think they're perfecting the sense and avoid technologies that are really going to help them with some of these concepts.
And so the unmanned and autonomous, not in a swarm, but just by itself, that seems like that would be an immediate fix for the Air Force personnel problem where they just can't find enough drone pilots.
I think that's certainly part of the solution. I think there's a number of things that are being done with multi-vehicle control that would enable, for example, one single pilot to control multiple systems. I think that has a lot of promise as well.
Kelly Saylor is Associate Fellow at the Center for a New American Security. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. The Defense Department's newly formed Defense Innovation Unit Experimental held its first town hall meeting last week in California. DIUX is part of DOD's so-called third offset strategy. Planners are trying to court non-defense companies with groundbreaking technologies to help bring the U.S. military into the future. Federal News Radio Scott Massioni spoke about the town hall with the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research and Engineering, Stephen Welby.
DIUX is one of our mechanisms that we're using to experiment with new ways to reach out to folks who don't traditionally engage with the department. It's an office we've stood up out in the Bay Area to engage with the innovative commercial ecosystem, right now principally with folks in the Silicon Valley area, but with a charter to engage kind of across the country. And the team is looking at new ways to connect small innovative commercial businesses to help solve some of the department's problems. And that was what the event was last week. We had a little over 200 companies that came. We had a chance to talk to them about the things that the department is looking at in areas like advanced computing, in areas like big data, in areas like novel healthcare kind of capabilities. We had a wide variety of small innovative businesses that came out, and we had over a dozen companies, organizations from across the department, agencies, and offices. They're out there with their business folks to talk to these small companies to help connect them back into the challenges the department has.
So what's kind of the reaction that you're getting from industry? This is a new endeavor. This is part of the third offset strategy. What's industry telling you that they need from government, and what are you telling industry that you need from them?
We're principally engaged with companies that don't typically see the department as a major customer. These are small startups. These are companies that often are focused on kind of commercial opportunities. And we want them to think about the national security space as well. Many of the technologies they're working on are also relevant to the challenges that we face. And so what we hear from these companies is that the government acquisition system is not as transparent as it could be, that they don't understand the kind of problems that the department has and the opportunities that it has. And we want to kind of reduce the barrier for entry. We want to try and help those companies understand the problems that we have, the places where they can help, and the ways that they can do business with us. And so one of the things that our DIOX office is intending to do is to help shepherd some of these small companies and help them to understand the kind of problems the department has that perhaps they might have solutions for, and also to help them understand how to do business with us, how to connect with the customer, how to find their way through the complex government acquisition process. And so that gives us leverage on both sides. It provides a win-win both for us and on the government side with the new access to capabilities, and it provides companies with the potential to access new adjacent markets to their commercial work.
So you've had this town hall now. You've heard some of the qualms with the acquisition system. What's the next step in this? Are you going to set up maybe a joint acquisition office? You know, how are you going to allay some of these fears the industry has in working with government?
I think that the key to kind of laying those fears is communication. I think that we had great engagement with the companies that are out there, and that many of the concerns that folks address really are just can be addressed by better communication. Folks have myths about what it takes to do work with the government. We want to put those myths to bed. Really, the DIOX, the X is key. It's a Defense Innovation Unit experimental, and we're trying a variety of experiments, new ways to engage with communities that don't often look at the department as a customer. Those include things like hackathons. They include some of the events we've held where we brought out technical experts in certain areas and made them available to talk to startup firms. We've been engaging with companies kind of where they live, being present and available at meetings and conferences. And the effort last week was an attempt to kind of bring a whole group of people in at one time to talk about new ways to do business with the government. And I think it was very successful. It was every seat in that auditorium was full. I was there, stuck around for a couple hours of kind of one-on-one engagement with companies afterwards, and I could have stayed longer if I'd had the time.
Obviously, you can't go into details onto what companies were actually there, but can you tell us some of the sectors that were there that aren't traditionally DOD-type companies?
We see the kind of companies that are reflected kind of in the commercial marketplace. People are doing work in advanced software or in novel computer processing, in commercial work on protecting data, on folks who are working in medical devices. I think I talked to companies in all those areas and more. I think there's a very large number of folks thinking about the opportunities that that software and machine learning and advanced processing and the kind of app development environment that people are thinking about offer in the commercial sector. And I think that many times those companies just don't think about the relevance of those same technologies to defense. And so I think that's the win for us, to be able to get those folks to think about defense problems, something that they may not have had a lot of experience with, and also for us to think about how we might be able to move those fast-moving technologies into our space. In the future, we're going to have to move a lot faster to speed the way that the department adopts technology and how we shift our systems to be more responsive, reactive, and agile. And we have a lot to learn from kind of the fast-moving commercial sector, and that engagement is part of what we're trying to accomplish here.
Town hall solicitation, it mentions other transaction agreements, which are kind of ways that companies can form coalitions or consortiums that help get through some of the acquisition minutiae. Do you see that as a vehicle to help these companies get in on the ground level with DOD and like they've done with the electromagnetic spectrum?
I think there's a whole variety of novel ways that we can engage with companies, from traditional FAR contracting to other transaction agreements to commercial type contracts, we want to be as flexible and agile as the companies we're dealing with, and so it's not going to be a one size fits all. We want to be engaging with folks and trying to find ways that we can leverage what they're doing to the benefit of both small business and to government.
And have you seen an interest from industry in OTAs at all?
I think there's interest in all the vehicles. I think that there's a really strong interest in working with the department in trying to see how the work that folks are doing, the technologies that they're exploring, might be relevant to national security challenges. And we welcome that. We welcome that that strong interest in helping our nation. And we want to make sure that we lower the burden for folks who want to come play.
Intellectual property has been a big issue, and Frank Kendall, he's spent a lot of time trying to kind of get industry to relax a little bit about, how DOD is going to be using their property. How did you reinforce his message, and did you add anything else to that, to these new companies?
We've got a great kind of a two-pager on intellectual property that we provide to everybody who is out there that really isn't intended to kind of, in just plain language, try and eliminate some of the myths about intellectual property. And in fact, we had a company that stood up during the meeting and said that they've never had a better customer with respect to intellectual property than the U.S. government. You know, when we work with people on developing systems for us, those companies retain all of the intellectual property rights for any commercial application of any of the work that goes on in almost any agreement that we sign. And so for these companies that are looking at working with us and working in the commercial sector, it's a win-win all around. The department is only focused on kind of ever retaining the minimum set of IP rights to do our business. It's a great myth that engaging with the department forces you to give up some intellectual property in ways that are problematic, and we're happy to put that myth to rest anytime we can.
Just real quick, what's next for industry? Is there another town hall coming up? What are you planning next for DIUX?
The DIUX folks have a plan over the rest of the year with lots more engagements of a whole variety of types. Their door is open daily, and folks are meeting with them every day. It's not about a single event. It's a continuous mission, and they're engaged strongly.
Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research and Engineering Steve Welby speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.